Your conference is being recorded.
Well, greetings, everyone. So this is the second pre-application assistance call for the Environmental Justice Small Grants Opportunity for 2021. This is funding opportunity number EPA-OP-OEJ-21-01. So that's the funding opportunity number. I hope you all have a copy of the funding announcement, either on your laptop or desktop in front of you or on your phone. There are two active EJ grants opportunities. And again, we're talking about the Environmental Justice Small Grants Opportunity this evening. So I'm going to mute everybody's lines, and I'll give instructions about how to unmute your line if you have a question. Just one second.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay. So my name is Jacob Burney. I'm the Environmental Justice Grants Program Manager here at EPA, and I'm your main contact for any questions that you have about this opportunity and any questions that you have that aren't answered on this call. So my contact information is here on page 1 of the request for application, the funding announcement. I'm there at the top in the translation section, and my contact information is throughout the rest of the request for application as well. So you can reach me there if I can't answer your question or we don't have time for me to go over your question on the call. Before we get started, let's just go over some general information about the structure of the call. This is a 90-minute call, so I have 90 minutes allotted to take general questions and answer and to go over the specific sections of the request for application. So I've already muted the lines, and I am recording this. So if your partners or other members of your staff want to listen in on the call, they can just contact me. I also hope to post the recording here before the end of the week. So it should be available on our website as well. Okay. Now, in terms of the structure of the call and the question and answer, I'll be going over each main section of the funding announcement, section by section. And after several pages and several sections are covered, I'll stop for question and answers about that specific section. And at the end of the call, I'll open it up if we have time for a general question and answer about any other topics that might come up or questions that you have that weren't answered previously. Okay. So let's go ahead and start, you know, just here at the beginning of the funding announcement. So page 1, again, I hope you have the funding announcement in front of you. It's available on the grants.gov website, as well as on our epa.gov/environmental justice website. So that's the URL to access, you know, our environmental justice website and the RFA on our webpage as well. Again, epa.gov/environmental justice. Okay. So let's start with the summary section. So pages 1 through 5. Okay, so this is, again, the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. We'll be providing grants to approximately 56 community-based organizations nationwide for community-driven projects that engage, educate, and empower underserved communities to better understand and address local environmental and public health issues. So this RFA defines underserved communities, and you can see it there. Underserved communities are communities that have environmental justice concerns and or vulnerable populations, including people of color, low income, rural, tribal, indigenous, and homeless populations that are disproportionately impacted by environmental harms and risks. So going back to community driven and what that term means. So community driven projects are projects that include activities where community residents and or representatives are integrally involved in the thinking behind and execution of those activities. And all applying organizations, all community-based organizations, should have a direct connection to the underserved community impacted by the environmental harms and risks. So your applying organization should have a history, a direct connection with the target community of your proposed project. So this funding announcement has 4 areas of emphasis. The first one are projects addressing the impacts of COVID-19 on underserved communities. The second is climate and disaster resiliency projects. The third are ports initiative projects. And the fourth are projects proposed by small nonprofit organizations. And I'll be going over the details of those 4 areas of emphasis here shortly. Okay. Scrolling on to page 2, middle paragraph there, we're talking about funding levels. So the total estimated funding for the program is $2.8 million with approximately 5 grants per EPA region. So there are 10 EPA regions. We're looking to divvy up those 56 awards between, and divvying them up 5 per region or thereabouts. So each grant will be for up to $50,000 for a one-year project period, so 12 months. This year, we did receive a plus up in funding for the EJ grants, which should allow us to fund more grants at a higher funding level per grant. So usually we don't have as much funding as we have this year. Usually we fund the grants at $30,000 for a one-year project. This year, we're able to fund them at $50,000 for a project or per project, and to also increase the total number of projects from about 40. Usually that's our yearly threshold, but we'll be able to do over 50, closer to 60 this year. So we are excited about that. In addition, EPA's Office of Transportation and Air Quality, or OTAC, is contributing an additional $300,000 for projects specifically in support of EPA's ports initiative. And again, we should be able to fund approximately 56 projects nationwide at $50,000 per project. Applicants should plan for an October 1st start date for their 12-month project. So later this year, October 1, 2021, should be the project period start date. So please plan for that. Due dates. So applications. Your applications are due by Friday, May 7, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's Eastern Time. Be aware of the time difference if you're not on the East Coast. So if you're on the West Coast, know that your application is due at 8:59 p.m. Pacific Time. So don't let the change or your being in a different time code or really affect your application and getting your actual application in before the deadline. Again, remember Friday, May 7th, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, okay? And all applications must be submitted through grants.gov before the deadline. So applications cannot be mailed in. Applications cannot be emailed directly to me. Make sure the applications go through the grants.gov website, and I'll go over those details later here during the call. Okay, so moving forward, so at the bottom of page 2, we're talking about the program. So again, we have two opportunities, two EJ grant opportunities open simultaneously this year, both the Environmental Justice Small Grants and the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Awards. So which is for me? So our budgetary plus up in funding this year is allowing the EJ program to offer both of these opportunities at the same time. So be aware that a single organization can receive only one EJ grant award this year between these two opportunities. So you can receive either an EJ small grant or an EJ collaborative problem solving award. You cannot receive both. Okay. The reason for this is because there are a multitude of communities nationwide dealing with environmental injustices. And for our program to have as wide a reach as possible, we want to be able to provide funding to as many different communities as possible. So again, one award per between both of these opportunities. You can only receive one award. So the guide and the guidance and the information here on the bottom of page 2 and going into page 3 will provide you guidelines and clarity as to which of these two opportunities might be better suited for your particular organization. Now, for this opportunity we're talking about tonight, the Environmental Justice Small Grants, this opportunity is designed for organizations who are more recently established or just starting out, who have smaller staffs and operating budgets, and or have never received a federal grant before. Now, the other opportunity, the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving opportunity, is for larger, more experienced organizations who have more established partnerships and have more experience with federal grants. To help you further, so while the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Awards, those projects do provide more funding per project. So the Collaborative Problem Solving, they provide $160,000 per award rather than the $50,000 for the small grants. Those Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Awards are twice as long. So those are two-year grants versus 1 year, which is for the Environmental Justice Small Grants. These are one-year projects. The other opportunity, two-year projects. So be aware of that difference. And also, the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Opportunity might be more competitive because there are fewer of those awards. So instead of the 56 that we're going to award from the small grants, we're only planning to award around 20 for the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Award. So they might be a little bit more competitive, there might be a little bit more oversight, and they're more robust and longer lasting, the other opportunity. So just be aware of these differences, and hopefully this guidance and the guidelines here on pages 2 and 3 and the table especially might help you determine which of these opportunities is, again, better suited for your particular organization and for your particular project. Okay. Again, just a reminder, so if you apply to both of the opportunities, the small grants and the collaborative problem-solving opportunity, you will be wasting your time on one of them. Again, your organization can only receive one EJ grant award between these two open opportunities. Okay. Let's continue on. And after I finish the summary section, about on page 5, I'll stop for general questions and answer about the summary section before we move on to project types, eligibility, eligible project activities, threshold, and the scoring criteria. Okay. So I'll stop for questions here in a couple of minutes, and we'll address issues or any questions you have about the special considerations, the funding levels, what have you. So scrolling down, page 3, we'll talk about the special considerations. So these are the 4 areas of emphasis that I mentioned earlier. So the first one we're talking about is the COVID-19 focus. So we're focusing on projects that are working to address the impact of COVID-19 in underserved communities. So there at the bottom of 3, you see public education, training, emergency planning, and or investigations on the impact of COVID-19 on vulnerable populations and underserved communities. So applicants can use funding to conduct activities such as that, developing plans, outreach, trainings, investigations, and programs to specifically work on mitigating the impacts of COVID-19 on EJ communities. So applicants are encouraged to develop innovative plans and processes to conduct effective outreach to underserved communities in the midst of social distancing and local stay-at-home orders, especially in places where internet access may not be readily available to all residents. So examples of eligible activities include, but aren't limited to, sharing information related to EPA-approved disinfectants which are effective against COVID-19, addressing underserved residents' increased exposure to in-home air or water pollutants and healthy housing issues as an unintended consequence of local stay-at-home orders. Thirdly, training of community health workers as community educators for environmental justice communities. Also, educational information about COVID-19 vaccines, vaccine safety, and vaccine access is also an eligible activity. A note, the EJ grant funds cannot be used for human health studies, including taking blood or other medical information from humans. Our funds also can't be used to administer vaccines. So you can't use EJ grant funding to put shots in arms. But general outreach, education about vaccine access, vaccine safety, and other information about vaccines is fine. It's eligible. So after the focus of COVID-19 and COVID-19 impacts on environmental justice communities, the second area of emphasis is projects addressing climate, disaster resiliency, and or emergency preparedness. So the effects of climate change and extreme weather events tend to adversely impact the most vulnerable communities and populations disproportionately. Therefore, EPA may give special consideration to projects that address the needs of underserved and vulnerable communities that have been adversely impacted or are likely to be adversely impacted by natural disasters, including but not limited to hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, floods, earthquakes, and future pandemics. So that's our second area of emphasis. So the first, again, projects that address the impact of COVID-19 on EJ communities. Secondly, projects that address climate and disaster resiliency and or emergency preparedness. Projects that prepare underserved populations and vulnerable communities for natural disasters. Next, our third area of emphasis. So the bottom of page 4 there is our Ports Initiative Partnership and our Ports Initiative Funding. So since 2016, EPA's Environmental Justice and Ports Initiative programs have partnered to support effective and meaningful engagement between communities the port industry, and other port stakeholders. So emissions from diesel equipment at ports disproportionately impact nearby communities that are often comprised of low-income populations and people of color. So to be considered for Ports Initiative funding, your project must include an explanation of community concerns related to diesel engine emissions from a port or rail facility. Secondly, a description of how your project will prepare the community to engage with other port or rail facility stakeholders to address these concerns. And thirdly, project activities can only be related to the Clean Air Act, Section 103B3. And I'll go over the environmental statutes here after we finish the summary section, okay? So OTAC is looking to fund approximately 6 environmental justice small grants with projects related to ports issues, okay? And each of those projects, like the others, will be for up to $50,000 each, right? So, and I'll go over the details of the Ports Initiative partnership and types of ports projects here after we finish the summary section. All right. And scrolling onto page 5, and then I'll open it up for questions about the summary section, is our fourth area of emphasis, which is our small nonprofit set-aside track. So with this is our focus on providing support and equitable access to EPA funding, or especially grant funding, for small nonprofit and grassroots organizations. So we intend to set aside approximately half of the total available funding under this announcement, which amounts to about $1.4 million, for awards to nonprofit organizations who have 10 or fewer full-time employees on staff at the time of submission of their application and at the time of award. So this set aside is intended to promote environmental justice funding to those communities and grassroots organizations that need it the most. So there will be 2 tracks, one for small nonprofits and one for all other eligible entities. This way, applicants who are smaller and have fewer resources will compete against similarly sized organizations for these grants. Ports Initiative applications will also be organized into these 2 tracks. To qualify for the set-aside, applicants must submit documentation with their application, such as an employee roster, verifying the number of full-time employees on staff and the associated hours per week and salary wage details for each full-time employee in their organization. So if you do qualify for the set-aside at the time of submission, but your organization grows in size after you submit your application, which may happen depending on the impact of the COVID relief bill and the economic stimulus package and things starting to loosen up with additional and more vaccine access for the public. So if you do grow in size, you know, in the next month after you submit your application before May 7th, you need to let me know as soon as possible. So if you inform me in time and you can confirm that your change in size has no material impact on your original work plan, then I can move you onto the other track with the larger organizations. However, if you don't inform me of your change in size, then you might be deemed ineligible to receive an award. So the opposite isn't true. So if you don't qualify for the set-aside initially and your organization shrinks in size to fewer than 10 full-time employees after you submit your application, you will not be moved to the set-aside track, and you'll remain in the non-set-aside track. You'll remain with the larger organizations. But again, if after you submit your application, you do grow, you submit and you qualify for the set-aside, you have 10 or fewer full-time employees, and after you submit a month or two down the line, sometime in the summer, you do grow beyond having 10 full-time employees, you grow to 12 or 13 full-time employees, just let me know as soon as possible, and then it should be no problem for me to move you onto the larger track. If you don't let me know and you are selected for award later on and we find out that you have more than 10 full-time employees, the circumstances may not allow your particular organization to be eligible at that time. So just keep me informed, and you shouldn't really have a problem. So that's the small nonprofit set-aside. Again, it's to make sure that smaller organizations, grassroots organizations, have a fighting chance and have equitable access to the full breadth of EJ grant funding. So those are 4 areas of emphasis. I went over funding levels, also general structure, timeline for the grant. So the grant has an October 1st start date. Also, the applications are due again May 7th, Friday, May 7th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're in a different time zone, be aware. If you're on the West Coast, that's much earlier your time. That's 8:59 p.m. your time. So don't let the circumstances come about where you're submitting, you've done all the work, you're about to submit on time, and the time difference is a reason that your application can't be submitted through grants.gov. So just be aware, if you have a question, just use your keypad on your phone to press #6, and that unmutes your line. So if you have any questions about the summary section, I can go over those now. And then after we finish general questions right now, about 5 to 10 minutes, we'll go into eligibility, project type, go into the requirements of a full application package, the scoring breakdown. We'll go over that here in the next, 70 minutes or so, okay? So general questions about the summary section? And again, that's #6, #6 on your keypad if you have a question. Okay, if there are no questions right now, we can continue. Okay, let us scroll into the funding opportunity section. So that starts on page 5. Just because there aren't any questions, I did want to summarize just a little bit more before we get really into the meat of the RFA. So in your applications, applicants should state which, if any, of those four areas of emphasis apply to their specific environmental justice small grant project and provide details on how those other factors apply. For example, all applicants should state on their project summary page whether they are applying for the Ports Initiative funding, whether they believe their organization qualifies for the small nonprofit set-aside, or whether their project addresses COVID-19 impact, and or whether their project addresses the climate disaster resiliency focus area as well. So failure to do so, to mention which areas of emphasis, if any, do qualify for your particular project, that might affect EPA's ability to consider those factors during the final selection decisions. EPA may verify any of the information you provide in your application and any of your qualifications for those areas of emphasis before the final selection and evaluation process as well. Now, please note that all eligible organizations are encouraged to apply. Also, all eligible project types are encouraged to apply as well. So under this announcement, projects not addressing COVID-19, climate disaster resiliency, or ports are still eligible for awards, and organizations with more than 10 full-time employees are encouraged to apply as well. So the special considerations only apply as other factors that the selection official may consider in determining selections among high-ranking applications. So the most important thing is for you to put forth a well-written and strong application. You do not get more points for qualifying for any of the special considerations or areas of emphasis. So I'll give you an example of how this works. So if there are two high-ranking applications, one scores a 92, and doesn't address any of the areas of emphasis, and one scores an 88 and addresses the disaster resiliency consideration, then we, EPA, may select the 88 that addresses disasters. However, if the scores are 92 with no special considerations versus 60 with multiple considerations in areas of emphasis, then we will not select the 60. Okay, we can only pick a lower score if it's still relatively high ranking. And a 60 out of 100 points is not a high-ranking application. So again, putting forth the best application and project you can based on the needs of your community is much more important than trying to contort your project into hitting all the areas of emphasis. Remember, these projects, your project, should be community-driven. So if the community truly drives the direction of your project planning, then more often than not, your score will reflect that. Okay. So now we can move on into the funding opportunity section. So this is pages 6 through 13, and I can go over these in detail. Start on page 6 there at the top with the definition of environmental justice. So environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Environmental justice, or EJ, is especially important at the community level, and that importance is reflected in the goals of the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. So what are our program goals? So the Small Grants Program strives to be one of the more accessible federal grant programs for community-based organizations. Our program is targeted especially for community-based organizations where the organizations themselves manage the money, not a larger university and not a local government. So our goal is to support community-based organizations that apply to our EJ grant opportunities, regardless if they receive one of our grants or not. So all applicants who apply to the 2021 opportunity will be added to our EJ grants applicant database. And the database will help our program, the Environmental Justice Program, identify and work with additional underserved communities outside the context of our grant awards. So types of projects that we fund. You can see those on page 7. Get into some details here. So in general, underserved communities are dealing with several different environmental issues at any one time. So therefore, our statutory authorities allow us to fund a wide range of different project types. These include, but aren't limited to, projects that address air quality, water quality, lead and other toxic substances, illegal dumping, green job training, food access projects, and more. And you can see the link here on page 6 and going into page 7, actually, for additional information that can help you. So that'll take you right to our environmental justice webpage that houses the RFA and additional resources, including frequently asked questions for this opportunity. Okay. So here in this section, the funding opportunity section, we also provide some detailed examples of eligible COVID-19 related projects and other general non-COVID-19 projects. So some allowable COVID-19 projects, and you can see these starting on page 9. So some allowable COVID-19 projects include healthy homes campaigns, especially for residents spending more time in substandard housing due to local stay-at-home orders. There are food insecurity projects that reduce vehicle use in areas hit hard by COVID-19. Public awareness campaigns about EPA-approved disinfectants and reductions of asthma triggers, general information related to COVID-19 vaccine access and information can be shared as part of our projects as well. And again, as I mentioned earlier, administering vaccines is not an eligible activity. Okay. And as I mentioned before, if you click on that URL on page 7, that'll take you directly to our Environmental Justice Small Grants webpage, which houses the RFA, the funding announcement itself, as well as our pre-application call schedule, resources, including a frequently asked questions document that can also hit on any questions that we don't cover during the call this evening. Okay. So what are some of our program's funding authorities? So to see our funding authorities, please scroll back to page 8. Starting on page 8, it goes into detail about the 7 environmental statutes that are eligible for our EJ grant funding. Okay. So the program is designed, the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program is designed to address multi-statute environmental and public health issues. For this reason, each project must include activities related to at least one of the federal environmental statutes listed here on page 8. Okay. So those statutes are the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, Marine Protection Research and Sanctuaries Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Solid Waste Disposal Act, and the Toxic Substances Control Act, and the applicable sections of those acts. So you must clearly and conclusively identify and cite at least one of the federal statutes in your work plan. So linking to a qualified environmental statute is required. If you don't mention the statute in your application, then your application may be ruled ineligible. So please do not let that happen to you. Applications that address more than one statute will not benefit by receiving higher scores. For the Solid Waste Disposal Act, and this is the red text here under 6, on page 8, So for the Solid Waste Disposal Act, please be aware that applications supporting brownfields work, for example, large assessments and large cleanups, or work that includes extensive cleanup activities beyond the need for a demonstration, experiment, or training project, are not eligible for funding under this announcement. So those types of activities are eligible for brownfields funding directly in the brownfields program. So going into some details about eligible activities, bottom of page 8, running into page 9, proposed environmental justice grant projects should have a learning component as part of the project. All right. Projects should include gathering or transferring information or advancing awareness, research, public education, demonstrations, monitoring, training, development, investigations, surveys, and studies are examples of authorized grant activities. Examples of unacceptable grant applications involve performing, like I mentioned before, large-scale cleanups, treatments, routine recycling services, and major disposal or energy recovery projects. Also, construction activities, large-scale construction and demolition activities are ineligible as well. So with these projects, with eligible environmental justice grant projects, proposed activities, again, need to have that learning component. With the large-scale cleanups, treatments, routines, recycling services, et cetera, those projects would lead little to no funding for any of the public education or training or outreach activities that would qualify as eligible for our program. So proposed activities should lead to improved understanding and awareness as a fundamental and essential part of your project. So for example, if you want to install rain barrels as part of a clean water or green infrastructure project, make sure that those rain barrels will be used in trainings, monitoring, and or public education. Or if you want to repurpose an old building for a community center as part of a much larger community project, you could use the EJ funding to propose to use that to have several residents trained and shadow the renovation team as part of a new environmental jobs program. And you could also use the environmental justice grant funding to hold demonstrations at the center. Just remember, whatever you propose and whatever issues you want to address, make sure that there is a learning component to your project, so those activities will be eligible. So on into the bulk of the demonstration activities and the definition of demonstrations. This is the second paragraph here on page 9. So demonstrations are also an eligible project activity. So your project does not have to include demonstrations, but if it does, then those activities must comply with the details here in this paragraph. So for a project to qualify as a demonstration, the project must involve new or experimental technologies, methods, or approaches where the results of the project will be shared so that others can benefit from the knowledge gained. For our grants, most demonstrations focus more on new approaches and methods rather than on new or experimental technologies, just because new technologies can be expensive, and oftentimes the target community has yet to be exposed to newer ways to address environmental issues that can really help in their communities. So again, the idea of new or experimental is relative. We're not asking you to utilize some cutting-edge new technologies that universities or NASA is tinkering with. That wouldn't be reasonable. More along the lines of what is reasonable is proposing a demonstration that features approaches and methods that haven't been used a lot elsewhere. So you can propose demonstrations and methods that have been used elsewhere, but if you do, just you need to make sure your demonstration is a little different than previous ones and explain that difference clearly. So find a way to differentiate your demonstration project from others that have come before it. Again, you don't have to create something completely new from scratch, but you do need some new wrinkle to your demonstration that will allow yours to qualify as new. So I know that's a pretty nuanced definition of demonstration, but that's the definition we go by here at EPA. So again, your particular project doesn't have to include demonstration projects or demonstration activities as part of the larger environmental justice small grant project. But if you do want to include demonstrations and for it to qualify as a demonstration, you need to follow the guidance provided here in this paragraph, on page 9. Okay. So I'll stop there. J- general questions. Let me go a little bit further into the examples of general environmental justice small grant projects, as well as the eligible project activities for ports funding. And then we'll take questions about allowable projects, allowable project activities, eligible project types, et cetera. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the ports activities and project activities eligible for ports initiative funding. So this is on page 11 here. Okay. So EPA's Ports Initiative Program, as I mentioned before, led by OTEC, is going to provide approximately $300,000 for up to 6 additional environmental justice small grants focused on ports issues. So again, to be considered for this Ports Initiative funding, your particular project needs to provide an explanation of community concerns related to diesel engine emissions from a port or rail facility, a description of how your project will prepare the community to engage with other port or rail facility stakeholders to address these concerns, and your project should only include activities related to the Clean Air Act, Section 103B3. And the link here, see Section 1C above, that link takes you back to the environmental statute section that we covered earlier. Okay, some additional examples of eligible project activities. Let me just bring this up for you. Examples include prioritizing goals and concerns. For example, learning about different sources of diesel pollution and identifying priority concerns such as truck traffic in a particular neighborhood. Also, consider identifying levers of change. For example, investigating upcoming port expansion projects and opportunities to provide input. Also, identifying influencers and other stakeholders with whom to build relations. For example, building those relations with researching agency staff, elected officials, and other community stakeholders who support your goals. So those are some more examples of eligible ports-related activities that would qualify for the Ports Initiative funding. And I do believe that we have Sarah Froman from the Office of Transportation and Air Quality on the line. So Sarah, if you wanted to unmute your line and provide any additional guidance or information on the call about the Ports Initiative funding, we can do that now. And to unmute your line, it's #6 on your keypad, #6.
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, Sarah, I can hear you. Yep.
Okay, yes, my name is Elizabeth. I just wanted to clarify about the large scale construction. So you said that is fine as long as there is community member involvement or a learning component, such as maybe having like a local workforce task or something like that?
A local workforce? Yeah, if part of your project is to develop environmental jobs training program or a workforce or work staff development, then that would be eligible. So if that particular staff is going to be doing large scale construction, or an essential part of your project is to construct a new community center, for example, then the large scale construction, the actual renting out of the cranes and the dump trucks, et cetera, those wouldn't be eligible, because large-scale construction isn't eligible in and of itself, but for development of your workforce, your training, those activities would be eligible.
Okay, so once you did have, like, the local community trained to do whichever work that you have in mind, that's all that the funding can go to? It can't continue on with the actual construction?
Well, the construction... construction activities, large-scale construction activities, aren't eligible. So if part okay. of your workforce training is, let's say that you're developing green infrastructure, hoop houses or greenhouses or something like that, smaller-scale installations, those are eligible. But if
okay.
you're going to use, yeah, if you're going to use the $50,000 as part of a project, you know, to develop a town center or to refurbish homes, I mean, $50,000 just isn't sufficient funding
yeah.
in and of itself to do that work anyway. So we want our funding to really go to holistic community a support. So making sure that the community understands that there are issues in the community, to start to identify ways that residents can change their behavior to kind of protect them from the issues in the community, while partnerships are developed with local stakeholders, for-profit businesses, local officials, other community-based organizations, to start to really address and resolve the environmental issues in the community through other funding sources. So it's really to get the ball rolling in the community, identify those issues, start to address those issues, and then, you know, apply for a Brownfields grant, apply for a Superfund, so for some Superfund funding, some really, really multi-million dollar investments that can more readily respond to the pressing needs in the community. Does that make sense?
I guess so. So, like, something smaller, like you had mentioned before, like doing some things that make a building maybe a little bit more energy efficient, like that would be considered smaller scale?
Like a cool roofs program, so cool roof installations, just refurbishments of a single dwelling may not be eligible, probably will not be eligible, because, again, your project should address more than one particular issue or fix one particular issue. The funding is meant to support a community. So to get outreach to the community, community residents, multiple residents, address more holistically some of the issues or one or more pressing issues in the community. But funding specifically for A, we have we need to develop a new roof or develop a new portion of this particular building. That's not really a community-driven project. That's just a project for that particular room. So our projects are more, have a broader perspective than that. Okay.
Understood. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. So, I just wanted to mention again about the Ports funding, the Ports Initiative funding. So OTAC, the Office of Transportation and Air Quality, they are looking to have a Ports Initiative planning webinar on April 9th to highlight resources that can support community efforts to work with port operators to address diesel pollution, including tools, training materials, and lessons learned from efforts in Savannah, Seattle, and Southern California, some of the ports work that they've been doing over the last several years and recently. So the tools and other resources can help inform potential projects that could be eligible for the Environmental Justice Small Grants funding. And they should be posting information soon about that April 9th webinar on their Ports Initiative webpage, and we'll also share it here on our Environmental Justice Small Grant webpage as well. Again, look for April 9th, for a Ports Initiative planning webinar that any applicants who might be interested in the Ports Initiative funding or have ports-related issues pressing in their community or a target area, April 9th will be a webinar for that. So plan on attending then. Okay.
Jacob, this is Sarah. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, Sarah, I can hear you. Yep.
So hello, everyone. This is Sarah Froman. I work in this Office of Transportation and Air Quality, and Jacob did a very thorough job of explaining this section of the RFA and these ports initiatives, this ports initiative funding opportunity. And we hope that you will join this webinar to learn more about resources that could help inform projects that might be eligible for EJ Small Grants, but just wanted to flag that in the meantime, the RFA has a number of links to our website where you can read up on some of the projects that communities near ports in Seattle and Savannah and New Orleans undertook to do just that, to begin to better understand diesel engine emissions and begin to prioritize their concerns in the neighborhood, for example, operations or times when diesel emissions are most concerning. But in the meantime, feel free to peruse some of the resources on our website that might help inform work that you could do in this space. Thanks, Jacob.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. Really, really do appreciate it. So just moving on to, were there any other questions while we had some time here? Any questions about project type, eligible activities? If you have a question, pound.
Yes, just
Just
a quick clarifying question. Hello?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Can nonprofits with more than 10 full-time employees apply for the Ports Initiative projects?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
Hello?
Yes.
My question about project type, if it's appropriate in this, is really what my organization is looking at, is working on the Clean Water Act related activities, specifically looking at urban water pollution in a variety of neighborhoods. In the next year or two, we're going to be looking at E. coli and excess nutrients and what they do in the water systems, and doing a design competition with college students to come up with services or devices that could help address water quality issues with E. coli and excess nutrients that are stopping people from being able to be in creeks and rivers, in their parks, fishing, that kind of thing. Is that the sort of demonstration project that you would be interested in funding?
Yes, definitely. And all the activities you mentioned are the specific activities that would qualify. They're laid out in that bullet pointed section, pages 8 and 9. So you're talking about monitoring, research, so demonstrations, development investigations, studies and experiments. So monitoring E. coli and doing analysis of the data you collect is definitely an eligible activity. And we funded many clean water and water sampling and monitoring projects like that.
So we would not necessarily be sampling within the river on a regular basis and monitoring. It'd be more working with college students to help develop a tool or a resource or a service to help remove it or stop it from going into the river in the first place. So we can't always tell exactly how it would be applied, and because we can't second guess the end of the design competition. So where we're a little unsure is how to do where the EJ component comes in, because we can't necessarily pigeonhole a specific community that would be involved. It'd be any community along the waterway.
I got you. Yeah, that would be a development project, and that would qualify as a demonstration. So
okay.
It's a pilot program. You're looking to develop a new tool, so it would qualify as development, and you're going to be using data. Yeah, and you'll be using data as well. So, yeah, that's a project that would definitely qualify.
We do a lot of education and learning in elementary schools and in lots of schools in a lot of neighborhoods about what the root causes are, how human behavior impacts it, how to be aware of it, that kind of thing. So that would still qualify, even though when it comes to the environmental justice component, you're talking about having specific community engagement. Is college and university students enough of a specific community engagement? That's the piece we're a little unsure about.
The community engagement, so your project is targeting those community college students?
No, the community college students are helping. They're the design challenge,
right?
They're coming up with a service that would be used in lots of different communities. But we're not seeking community impact or engagement at the local level to help design the things. We're looking with college students to help design it. Do you understand?
Right. So the college students are partners. They're partners on your project. But the actual beneficiaries of your project would be the local communities that are helped by the tool and the information gleaned from the tool, right?
Right. But we can't necessarily guarantee that they'll, do that. So we were just not sure.
Right.
Criteria, because how involved they can be at the design phase is limited. It's more in once that tool or that process is understood and discovered, just learning about it and utilizing it.
Right. Yeah. So, fleshing out where possible any outreach you do to the community about the pilot demonstration project you're doing that's underway. So you could address engagement in those ways. If your particular project, at the start, does it initially have that direct community engagement?
Right.
But one of the deliverables of your project is going to be engagement. Make sure wherever possible, anything that you think will bolster the quality of your narrative as it pertains to the evaluation criteria we're looking for, and I'll go over those points and everything later on in the call, make sure you include that information. So it's only 11 pages, so you do have to be very diligent in how you organize your work plan, but do try to include that information. And all applications should have a direct connection to the community. So if your particular organization doesn't have a direct connection or as strong a direct connection as some others may, then there are ways that you should think about and strategically think about how you could structure your project where there is still some community engagement. Okay?
Wonderful. Yes, happy. Just didn't know we could do it at the end when we have something to share. So that's perfect. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. So any other questions about eligible project activities? I'll go over eligible entities. So what kind of nonprofit organizations, tribal governments are eligible? I'll go over that after we finish this section, the funding opportunity section, okay? But any other questions about project types? If you are pondering a particular project, if you just wanted to clarify anything that might be eligible with me, you can do that now.
Hi, I had a quick question. Hi, yeah, I had a quick question. I was just wondering, is it possible in the application to suggest a partnership between two organizations where I work for an environmental justice organization in Detroit, and I was just wondering if it's possible to do a partnership type proposal where we would be kind of the fiduciaries if we end up working with another group.
Okay, so do you think that you'd be acting as the fiscal sponsor?
Not necessarily the sponsor, but it's just that we would not necessarily be able to do the work without a partnership. Like, we would need to be able to work with another group that's not necessarily as focused on EJ, but would be able to help us carry out a project because we're currently a very small staff.
I understand. Yeah, partnerships are always encouraged. So, yeah, if you want to work with a partner, we encourage that for all environmental justice grant projects.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay, so let's move forward to the strategic plan linkage. So I'm going to mute everybody's lines, so just one second.
The leader has unmuted your line.
I have to unmute everybody to mute. That's how this conference.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay, everyone, so we're looking at the bottom of page 11, the strategic plan linkage, so pages 11 through 12. So all applications must support EPA's strategic plan 2018 through 2022. The plan is available at the link here in this section, as well as mention of the two executive orders mentioned on page 1 as well. So applicants should briefly explain in their application how their project will further goal 2, objective 2.2, of the strategic plan, which is to increase transparency and public participation. So this is only worth 2 points, so don't spend too much time doing this. And again, I'll go over the full point allocation later on during the call. But again, for the strategic plan, take a look at the link in this section and briefly explain in your project narrative how your project relates to increasing transparency and public participation. After that, we can get into outputs and outcomes and deliverables. So going into page 12 and 13. So outputs are environmental work products related to a particular environmental activity produced over a certain period of time. All outputs are measurable and must be measurable within the funding period. For example, the number of residents trained or the number of homes assessed. So outputs are what you do. Now, outcomes are the effect or benefit that will occur from carrying out a particular environmental activity. Outcomes also should be measurable, but all outcomes may not be achievable during the funding period. So there are short-term, intermediate, and long-term outcomes. So short-term outcomes are characterized as changes in knowledge. Intermediate outcomes are characterized as changes in behavior, and long-term outcomes are characterized as changes in conditions. So for one-year projects, which is the length of a small grant, you're predominantly going to be working on the short-term and intermediate level, okay? So while outputs are what you do, outcomes are the results of what you do, such as the number of families that have reduced exposure to lead based on a lead lead abatement project, I put it that way, okay? So that is an example of a result, an example of an outcome, okay? The applicant should develop and describe a performance measurement plan to be achieved through the proposed activities. This plan will track project progress, output and outcome strategies, and will provide the basis for developing lessons learned to inform future recipients. A logic model is a useful tool to present performance measures. Your performance measurement plan should be written into the body of your project narrative and should reference or cite key information in your attached logic model. Generally speaking, higher quality logic models and performance measurement plans include specific target metrics where possible for both outputs and outcomes. And you can see the appendices at the back of the funding announcement for sample logic model templates. So after that, on pages 14, we're getting into the award information section, section two. So here we have a resummary of the total available funding. Like I mentioned before, $2.8 million total, $2.5 million from the EJ program, and $300,000 from OTEC for the ports project. Approximately half, so $1.4 million, will be set aside for small nonprofits of 10 or fewer full-time employees. And again, 56 projects nationwide with up to $50,000 per project for one-year projects. Okay. After that, we can get into eligibility information. So who is eligible? So eligibility is at the bottom of page 14. So you can see there, incorporated nonprofit organizations. So those include, but aren't limited to, community-based organizations, grassroots organizations, environmental justice networks, faith-based organizations like churches, and those affiliated with religious institutions. Also eligible are U.S. territories, so territorial governments. Also, tribal governments can either be federally recognized tribes or state-recognized tribes. These include Alaskan Native villages as well as tribal or Native American organizations. So those four buckets are eligible for funding: nonprofit organizations, U.S. territories, tribal governments, and Native American or tribal organizations. So take note, in order to qualify, and I mentioned this earlier, for the small nonprofit set aside, your particular application needs to include either a roster or some other documentation verifying the number of full-time employees on staff and the associated hours per week and salary wage details for each full-time employee. Okay. Now, going back to the nonprofit requirements, applicants who are nonprofit organizations must include documentation that shows the organization is either a 501c3 nonprofit, as designated by the IRS, or a nonprofit organization recognized by the state, territory, commonwealth, or tribal jurisdiction in which it is located. Okay, so for the latter, the documentation must be on official state government letterhead. Okay. Also, right under there, we have eligible entities must be located within the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe where the proposed project will be located. So this is our in-state requirement. So this means that an applicant's registered address of record, in other words, the address designated on their IRS or state-sanctioned documentation, must be in the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribal jurisdiction as the location of the proposed project. So unfortunately, this means that even in the Northeast or the New England area, where many states are clustered together, organizations can only propose projects in their state. So an organization located in New York cannot propose a project located in New Jersey, even if that New York-based organization has a long history with the New Jersey community. So we have to be consistent with how we here in EPA apply this requirement. So we include this in-state requirement because, again, applying organizations should have a direct connection to the target community, to the underserved community. And we feel that this in-state requirement promotes that direct connection effectively. So in the past, prior to this requirement, there were some larger regional organizations that would apply and propose projects across state lines, but those organizations wouldn't have a strong connection with the target community, and they utilized contractors and partners almost exclusively to perform the outreach and community engagement activities. So again, one of our main goals as a program is to get the funds as close as possible to the people that need it the most. And funding an organization in a different state doesn't really help us in that effort. So that's why we have that in-state requirement there listed in the middle on page 15. Okay. Oh, mentioned fiscal agents and fiscal sponsors before. Let me go into some detail about that. So fiscal agents and sponsors are eligible to apply to this opportunity as long as the fiscal agent or sponsor is a 501c3 or state incorporated nonprofit organization. However, the applying organization, in this case, the fiscal agent, needs to understand that they, the fiscal agent, will be evaluated using the evaluation criteria, including their programmatic capability, and that they, the fiscal agent, will ultimately be responsible for carrying out the project. So if your organization chooses to use a fiscal agent to apply through grants.gov, we will consider that fiscal agent as the lead applicant on the grant. So if your fiscal agent doesn't really have a strong connection to the community, they do a lot of the financial and application information for you and other organizations, and that's kind of their work portfolio, then you may not score highly enough or as highly as you would want to on that direct connection to the underserved community. So you need to strategize and talk through with your staff and with your fiscal agent if it would be in your project's best interest and put forth the strongest proposal to have your fiscal agent apply. Now, if your fiscal agent also does community-based work, grassroots work from time to time, then it might be a wash and it might be great to have your fiscal agent apply on your behalf. But if that may not be the case, and they have more of a financial and administrative role exclusively, then you might want to consider trying to apply yourself through grants.gov. So we do have some lead time. The applications aren't due to May 7th, so your fiscal agent may be able to help you through the grants.gov process, just set yourself up with all the required registrations. So just think through that scenario if you are considering or usually utilize a fiscal sponsor for many of your grant applications. Okay. Now we can go into ineligible organizations. So starting on bottom of page 15. So the organizations listed here in this section are ineligible to receive an award, but we do encourage partnerships with these organizations. So all of these organizations listed can be partners, and partners, depending on the agreement with the lead applicant, can receive a portion of our EJ grant funding through subawards, through subgrants, or through contracts. Okay, so these organizations, colleges and universities, hospitals, for-profit businesses, state and local governments and their entities, quasi-governmental entities, national organizations like national nonprofits and chapters, smaller chapters and affiliates of those aforementioned organizations, and your 501c4s and individuals are not eligible to apply directly as the lead, but all of those organizations can be partners, and most of those organizations, except for your 501c4s, can receive a portion of the funding through subawards or through a grant or a contract. So keep that in mind. If your organization falls into any one of those ineligible listings, just be aware that you can still be a part of an EJ grant project and still receive a portion of the funding. You just can't apply directly. So if you're a nonprofit, you're a national nonprofit, and you have a headquarters in a centralized location somewhere, but you have other smaller chapters throughout the United States or throughout several regions of the United States, you wouldn't be eligible to apply directly, but either your headquarters or one of the smaller branches or affiliates can partner with a local nonprofit or tribal government on a project. So that would be a way for you to still be a part of a project and still receive a portion of the grant funding through a partnership like a contract or a subaward. Okay. So going forward to threshold eligibility, and I'll finish this section, threshold eligibility, and then I'll take questions on eligibility and threshold. So pages 16 through 17, so in this section, we highlight that all applications must be submitted through grants.gov again. However, to even be able to submit your application through grants.gov, you first must be registered in both SAM.gov and grants.gov. So in this section, we stress the point of getting registered early. You can see the red text here in this section, and please take that red text to heart. Register as soon as possible. Okay, every year we have several organizations that wait till the deadline date to register in SAM.gov or grants.gov. The registrations can take a month or more to be finalized, and as a result, some of these organizations, they wait too late, they can't apply through the grants.gov website, and they try to email me their application. I can't receive applications via email except in rare circumstances. So applications, your application must come through grants.gov. To be able to do that, you need to start the registration process as soon as possible. So if you're going to apply yourself and not use a fiscal sponsor, which we encourage, you need to start that process, take those steps to get registered starting now, as soon as possible. So May 7th doesn't creep up on you and you're not able to apply. Okay. So after the grants.gov requirement, that's one and two, we're getting to the qualified environmental statutes. So please remember your linkage to the environmental statutes. So a project work plan must explain how the statute is tied to the local environmental and public health issue in the underserved community. Any failure to clearly and conclusively identify and cite at least one of the federal statutes in your work plan may result in your project not being considered for award. So you must cite at least one. You can cite several, but at least one. If you cite several, citing several doesn't give you more points, but the requirement is to cite at least one environmental statute. Also, remember that an applicant must be located in the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribal jurisdiction where the project is located. Again, that in-state requirement we have. So further, funding restrictions and prohibited activities. Projects must not be used for the purposes of routine program implementation. So what we mean is that if your proposed project is strongly tied to a program that your organization developed years ago, then your project should propose some new element or be an expansion of that current program. For example, if your organization established an environmental education program for third graders years ago, do not simply request funding for another year of your third grade environmental education program. Instead, propose the expansion of your program to the seventh grade or the development of a brand new curriculum for the program. Again, going back to what we mentioned earlier, your program and your application doesn't have to develop something completely new from scratch, but it should propose something identifiable as new and different than your current work. So as long as you propose something slightly different and your work is slightly different than your current work and hopefully an expansion and growth from your current work, then your project is very, very likely to be eligible, and you shouldn't have any issues. Mm-hmm. Also, ineligible activities, projects must not be used for implementation of routine environmental protection restoration measures. For example, implementation of a municipal curbside trash pickup program, duplication of work performed under a prior EPA grant is also ineligible, or completion of work which was to have been completed under a prior EPA grant. That is also ineligible. If an application includes any ineligible tasks or prohibited activities, that portion of the application will be ineligible for funding and may, depending on the extent to which it affects the entire application, render the entire application ineligible for funding. Also, ineligible activities include lobbying, litigation against the federal government, travel for federal employees, and using our funds to serve as match on other federal grants. Also, as I mentioned earlier, large-scale construction or demolition projects are also not eligible activities. Okay. And you see C there, 17. So there is no cost sharing or matching required for the environmental justice grants, okay? No cost share or matches required. However, if you do volunteer to include a match, we will hold you to what you volunteer. So if you say that you're going to include $10,000 in matching funds, you will have to report out that you do adhere to your voluntary match. And by the end of the project, you have contributed $10,000 of matching funds. But you're not required to do that. It may not give you, and it does not give you any additional points. But depending on how it's structured with your project, it may make your overall project stronger. But again, there is no cost sharing required. Okay, so I wanted to stop here for questions on eligibility, eligible organizations, or eligible projects. So if you have a question on eligibility and if your particular organization is eligible, you can let me know that now. So #6, #6 on your keypad to unmute.
Hi, I have a question. This is Anna Bachman in Washington State, and I just want to ask, are you going to actually cover what are eligible expenses at some point? What's eligible and what's not?
Yes, I can go over eligible expenses. Did you have a particular question about an expense that you want me to answer now?
I'm wondering if stipends for youth internships would be an eligible expense.
Stipends for youth internships? That should be eligible.
Yeah.
It should be eligible, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. So, in terms of like the community that you're serving, does that need to be like a particular city, or would the project be considered stronger, application be considered stronger if it was like the region incorporating several cities, or what are your thoughts on that?
No, it doesn't have to be a particular city. A lot of our projects focus on specific neighborhoods, so
okay.
a specific location. A lot of our projects also focus on specific vulnerable populations throughout a city. So we fund projects that focus on asthma triggers for children in an entire city, and that population is the focus of the entire project, and tracking data about asthma triggers for children, or tracking blood lead levels on children as well throughout an entire city or particular neighborhoods is also a focus. So as long as your project is focusing on underserved areas, underserved communities, or underserved populations, then you should be good to go. So you don't have to, it doesn't have to be statewide. If you're located in California, you don't have to include data statewide for all of California. You can focus on specific towns, specific neighborhoods, or specific populations.
Okay. Oh, I see. Oh, that is very helpful. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. Yes, sir. You had a question?
Yes, I did. I was. This is Chad Ingram from Fort Pierce. I was calling. I was wanting to know about the particular laws that you said that we have to cite to connect with some of the different parts of our projects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have read through a lot of them. I don't see anything dealing with the climate heat. The neighborhood that I'm in is one of two places in the country where we've had higher instances of heat-related illnesses. But I don't.
Right.
I do see some information around, you know, the Clean Air Act, but I don't. You know, heat's not a pollutant.
Right, but you would the Clean Air Act would be the one you would want to cite. Because additional greenhouse gas emissions and climate change have caused the global heat and temperatures to rise. So your heat island effect, for example, you would cite the Clean Air Act for that. So that would be the proper statute.
Mm-hmm. And just an additional question. I was not interested in applying for the Ports Associated grant. But I've noticed in our area, one of the reasons that we have such high heat compared to people to the north and to the south of us is that we're the only ones with a port, and all of the trees are gone between us and the ocean, where our neighbors to the north and our neighbors to the south still have that dividing line. Now, mm-hmm. I was going to initially, you know, just start to talk to my community about it, but not necessarily place an application for that kind of grant. I just wanted to do some initial talks. Can I put the initial communication with them about the ports into the program without applying for the port program?
Yes, you can definitely put that in there. And
okay.
If your project does happen to qualify for Ports Initiative funding, or a portion of it qualifies for Ports Initiative funding, then we here internal to EPA can work out how we could allocate, you know, different funding pots for your particular grant. But again, these projects are community driven. So whatever your community wants to focus on and whatever issues, environmental issues, public health issues are most dire and acute in your community, just focus on those. And, you know, the funding will work out, you know, as it does. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Everyone, I just wanted to go over quickly, we have some time, the application information, so the components of a full application, and touch on the scoring criteria. The scoring criteria itself is pretty self-explanatory, but I wanted to give time for that as well, and then take general questions and answers with the remaining time we have. And I can stay past 8:30 p.m. For any other questions that you have as well, so that's not a problem. So I'll mute everybody, and then we can continue.
The leader has unmuted your line. The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay, so we're looking at pages 18 through 27. So these are the requirements of a full application package. So there are 7 items that the application package must contain. See them listed here. So the first portion, your standard grants.gov application forms. So these are part of the standard grants.gov application process. So when you start applying through grants.gov, you will automatically have to fill out these forms. So you see those listed there. After that, we get into the project narrative form, the work plan itself. So the work plan is limited to 11 pages, and the template is provided from pages 19 through 24 that you can use to help you organize your work plan. So the template is that green portion of the RFA. The use of the template is not required, but it is strongly encouraged. Following the template will help ensure that you hit on all the key elements that your project will be evaluated on, and it'll also make it easier for the EPA review team to review your application. So the template is organized in the exact order of the evaluation criteria in Section 5, which we'll touch on next, and that at that time I can go over the point allocations for the specific criteria. So for your work plan, your 11-page work plan, you should use the project narrative attachment form in grants.gov to attach your work plan. So there's a project narrative form, and there's an other form. So use the project narrative form for your 11-page work plan. The other attachments form you can use for all these other attachments that should be included in your full application, like your itemized budget sheet. So this will include itemized cost breakdown of your personnel costs, your fringe benefits, your contractual costs, your travel and equipment, supplies, of all the costs, your total costs, how you're going to use that $50,000 of EPA funding for this environmental justice grant. So the sheet should include sufficient detail for EPA to determine how federal funds will be used, okay? And please use the other attachments form, like I mentioned before. So after that, we have your project performance measurements and your logic model. So again, use the other attachments form for this so it doesn't count against your 11-page work plan limit. Your performance measurement plan should be included in your project narrative. Okay, and your project narrative and that and the particular performance measurement plan section should reference and cite key information in your attached logic model. Okay, so attach your logic model. So use the other attachments form for your logic model, and embedded in your project narrative, include in your performance measurement plan section citations and references to your logic model. That'll save you space, and it'll make it easier for you to organize it and for us here in EPA to review your application. After that, resumes of project manager and other key personnel. So your resume should be no more than 2 pages each, and you can attach all of those as an other attachment or using the other attachments form. You can combine them all into one attachment. So if you have 5 people that you're providing resumes for, you can provide all 10 pages covering all 5 people into one attachment and attach it. That's fine. After that, your proof of nonprofit status. So if you are a nonprofit organization, if you're a tribal government or U.S. territory, you don't have to include this information. Your proof of nonprofit status. So applicant organizations must include either an IRS letter designating them as a 501c3, or documentation that recognizes your organization is recognized by a state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe, Okay, so you need to, if you're a nonprofit, a registered 501c3, provide that IRS documentation. If you're not a 501c3 and you're a state incorporated nonprofit or state recognized nonprofit, include some information from your state that documents you as operating as a nonprofit or a charity in your state. For example, sometimes state nonprofits provide their basic business license. Some states include information in a basic business license that includes recognition of their particular organization as operating as a charity or state or a charity or nonprofit in that particular state. Okay, and your proof of nonprofit status should also be included as in your other attachments form. Okay, and also, if applicable, your staff roster with hours and wage info. So if you're applying for the small nonprofit set aside, use the other attachments form here as well, and include that staff roster should include information on your full-time employees, including hours worked to qualify as a full-time employee. It's 40-plus hours per week, as well as their wage and salary information. So if you have part-time employees, that doesn't count as full-time. So if you have 2 full-time staff and 8 part-time staff, then or 9 part-time staff, you wouldn't have 11 full-time staff. You would have 2 full-time staff. So you would qualify for the set-aside. So make sure that you just include those details so we can glean, you know, who qualifies for the set-aside and who does not. Okay. So that's what a full application package contains. So those standard grants.gov application forms and then the other 6 items for a total of 7 items in a full application package. Your work plan, 11 pages. Follow the green template. It provides guidance as to the point breakdowns. How your actual application will be evaluated. Okay. We can skip forward to the actual point breakdowns with the time we have left. So starting on page 32. So this is section 5. This is the application review information. And this is how your 11-page work plan and the attachments are going to be evaluated by the EPA review team. So starting with the ranking criteria, so on page 33, we have the program objectives. So applications will be evaluated primarily based on how well the proposed projects address the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program objectives. So the program objectives portion of the evaluation makes up nearly half of a project's ranking. So the total amounts to about 46 points out of a total of 100. So this includes your project summary page. So this is on page 34. So this is the information that you include on your cover page, your project summary page. Take note that your project summary page counts as page 1 of your 11-page work plan. So you, after your project summary page, you only have 10 pages left to include the information we're looking for about your project. Okay, so make sure that you keep as much as possible all the information in your project summary page to one page. If you let it bleed over into page 2, that's only going to cut on the amount of space you have for the rest of your work plan. Okay, so your project summary page is 2 points. So include all this information. So this is mention of your areas of emphasis, any areas of emphasis that your particular project qualifies for. That information would be included there, as well as your applicant information, a brief abstract of your project, a description of your of the applying organization. So that information would be included here. Again, the total is just worth 2 points, so don't spend too much time doing it. Just make sure you hit on most, if not all, of the bulleted points or items here, and you'll be good and you'll get 2 points. After that, you get into the meat of what you're going to be evaluated on. So starting here with 1B, we have environmental and public health information of the underserved community. So this is worth a total of 18 points. So in this section, applicants should address all 3 sub-criteria. Each of the sub-criteria are listed at 6 points each. So the first one is applicant describes and characterizes the underserved community directly impacted by disproportionate environmental and public health harms and risks and how the community is impacted by those harms and risks. So what are the local environmental and public health results are the project seeks to achieve? In other words, we're looking for here in sub-criteria 1, who is the community comprised of and what are the disproportionate environmental and public health issues that they experience? So this is where you provide a description of the environmental injustices that your community is dealing with. So this is how you qualify and characterize the disproportionality of your community. This is what makes your particular project an EJ project, and the community you're working with, an environmental justice community or community with environmental justice concerns. So this particular section and that subcriteria is very, very important, as well as the following two subcriteria. So number two is a description of the local environmental and public health issues that your project seeks to address. So the first portion is a description of all of the applicable issues that your particular community and populations are dealing with. And then second one is getting into the meat of which ones you want to address through your project. And thirdly, you have applicants should describe the local environmental and public health results the project seeks to achieve and how the underserved community will benefit from those results. So here, the applicant should include relevant information such as demographics, data, geographic location, community history. We encourage the use of EJ Screen to help them characterize, to help applicants characterize and describe the target community. Strongly encouraged, it's not required, but how to utilize EJ Screen. We did do a webinar on that last week, so the recording of that webinar is available on our webpage. You just click on that URL on page 7, it'll take you to that. And it's through Zoom, so you can just, if you have Zoom, you can just view it through your web browser. Okay. After that, we're going into the organization's historical connection to the underserved community. So this is worth 12 points total. Again, harping in on that direct connection that the applicant should have to the community. So this is how we evaluate that. Your history of involvement with the community on behalf of your organization, how your organization has worked with the underserved community's residents in the past, and an evaluation of community-driven participation, how the community's residents or organizations were involved in developing the current project plan and are part of the decision-making process. So that's an evaluation there of that direct connection to the underserved community. Moving forward, we have project linkages and partnerships. So again, I mentioned the strategic plan earlier. It's worth 2 points. Again, a description of how your particular project relates to the qualified environmental statute cited on your summary page. That's an evaluation worth 3 points. And then partnerships. Partnerships are strongly encouraged. You should include details about planned roles for each of your partners. We also encourage you to include a letter of commitment from your partners to help us verify that the partnership is legitimate. But an evaluation of your partnerships is worth a total of 9 points, 3 points for each of those subcriteria there in the middle. And then there's some information there in bold about what you should do and how you can still get some points in this section if your particular project does not have partnerships. Okay. After that, we get into project activities. So project activities, milestone schedule, and detailed budget narrative. So this is an evaluation of your project, so the steps you're going to take to execute a project and start to address and understand the issues that are disproportionately impacting your community. So you start with project activities, 12 points, very important. This is laying out clearly for us here in EPA what you're going to do during your project for those 12 months. After that, in support of your project activities and the descriptions, is your milestone schedule. So this supplements your project activities. So it's just clearly articulated, realistic milestone schedule, kind of organizing the time frames of when you hope to accomplish certain objectives in your project activities. And then an itemized budget sheet. So laying out how those $50,000 are going to be organized and itemized to help you address what you lay out in your project activities and your milestone schedule. And your itemized budget sheet, again, should be included as an other attachment. Okay. After that, we get into environmental results. So outputs, outcomes, tracking, and sustainability. Again, the first portion is worth 8 points. It's an evaluation of your logic model. So the quality of your outputs and your outcomes. Okay, your logic model should be included as an attachment. So include the other attachments form. After that, the performance measurement plan. So this will be a description of how you plan to measure and track your performance during the project, how you're going to track progress throughout the 12 months. So here in your performance measurement plan, you should include citations or references to your logic model. Okay, that helps you save space. So 4 points, and your sustainability plan and community vision. Okay, so that's an evaluation two worth 4 points. So how your particular project fits in with the community vision, if part of your project is developing a community vision for where the community wants to go, how it wants to revitalize or re-envision itself, different issues it wants to address and services it wants to be provided or it wants provided to it or wants to have access to. So laying out your sustainability plan and community vision and how your project can be sustained and the momentum gained through your project can carry on into the future to help your community achieve its vision. And that's worth 4 points. Then we get into programmatic capability. This is just an evaluation of your organization's capacity to carry out the project. So we do an evaluation of your organizational experience. We're just laying out your organization's experience with similar projects and with the proposed project. So that's worth 4 points. Also an evaluation of your staff experience and specifically the project manager who's going to be leading the project for your particular organization. Okay, and then your resumes will help support the information that you include in this section as well. So definitely include your resumes as well and include those as another attachment. Then you get into an expenditure of awarded grant funds. It's only worth 2 points, but it's just a quick briefing about how you will organize and track the grant funds, the $50,000. And then past performance, this is worth 6 points. So this is an evaluation of your federally funded and or non-federally funded grant agreements in the past, so over the last 3 years. So if you've received EPA grants in the past, you can include those there. If you haven't, if you received local grants, foundational grants, you can include those as well. If they're in similar size and scope, they would be applicable and we would definitely want to see that. If you don't have any federal or non-federal grants experience, that's fine. Just say that there in this section of your application. And you can still receive 3 points. It'll be a neutral score. You can still receive points. So if you don't have any grants experience, you don't get 0 points. You don't get zeroed out here. If you let us know that I don't have any grants experience at all, just if we see that particular clause in your application, you'll get 3 points. If you don't list contracts here, again, this is only grants experience we're looking at, not contracts, okay? And also, if you receive subgrants from larger grants from other organizations in your vicinity or other organizations that you work with, that counts too. So if you've been a subgrantee, that counts as grants experience. So include that information there as well. And this past performance evaluation is a total of 6 points. Okay. And the details I kind of just went over about what to do if you don't have any grants experience are there at the bottom portion of that third column there on page 41, okay? So that is the 100 points on which your particular applications will be evaluated on. Again, the bulk of it is your description of the disproportionate impacts on your community, the disproportionate environmental and public health issues. And then you get into the organization's historical connection, that direct connection to the underserved community. And then an evaluation of your project and how your project fits into helping address those issues that are acute in the community and fits into a larger vision. Okay. So I can stop there and take any questions about the evaluation criteria, general questions, because I know we're a little over time, general questions about eligibility, about the opportunity, how this fits in with the other environmental justice collaborative problem solving, what have you. So I can just open it up for questions. To unmute your line, #6, #6 on your keypad.
Hi, my name is Mona.
My name is Mona.
I just have a quick question in regards to, like, how, like, what type of project are you guys expecting? Like, are you expecting something that's, like, super, like, not unreasonable, but, like, you know, something really, like, changing of a community? Like, or, like, does it matter how large the project is? Say I want to start small and, like, do something with, like, education in, like, a certain school. Like, will that still be okay?
if you want to do a project in a certain school, if it's a small project, a small school related project, because again, we fund projects where there's an educational component, a learning component. So if part of your project is includes high school students or middle school students, kind of familiarizing them with environmental issues, climate issues, things like that, preparing them for climate disasters or the impacts of climate change, I mean, all of those potential activities would be eligible. And we funded many environmental education programs where schools are involved. Now, schools themselves can't apply because they're not a nonprofit organization or a tribal government, but schools and school districts can definitely be partners on a project.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Hello, a question I had was about the project manager.
Yes.
Is there a required amount of time for a project manager?
No, there's not a required amount of time. In some circumstances, the project manager is going to be hired using the grant funds. So that's fine. Just know that the project manager, there's a portion in your application in that evaluation criteria where we will evaluate the qualifications of that project manager and if they have experience working with communities.
Okay.
So if a person doesn't have any experience, then they probably won't get very many points for that particular criteria. But not having a project manager or having a project manager with limited experience with communities, does it make you ineligible to apply?
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any other questions?
Are you still there?
Anything? Yes, I'm still here. Yep.
Oh, okay. This is Tammy Chan. I'm the one that emailed you in the middle of the night. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I'm not familiar with the drawdown thing. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? If you do get the grant, is there an account populated, and how does that work?
Yeah, so the way that our EPA grants work, and especially our grant program, so if you're selected for award, you'll be set up in an ASAP system. So it's an automated system where you would have access to the full $50,000 upfront, and you would draw down on a reimbursable basis based on your project needs. So let's say that you get $50,000 at the start of the project October 1st, and over the first month, you need $3,000 in terms of publication or public education outreach and project recruitment. Then you would draw down $3,000 for those costs that you accrue. And you would do that just throughout the 12 months until you've drawn down the funds and completed your project.
So you do have to spend the funds and get reimbursed. You can't draw down and then show receipts that you spent it for that.
Right. The ideal way is to accrue the costs and then reimburse yourself. Our grants office has afforded all of our EPA grantees more flexibility, especially in light of the pandemic and all the constraints and stress that everybody is under. So if you do need to draw down to just get some costs taken care of up front, you just cover that and go over that with your EPA project officer and your grant specialist on that particular situation. But if it's a really, really critical situation, we're definitely willing to work with you on that, on those particular circumstances. Okay.
That's helpful. We're such a small organization. Trying to upfront $50,000 would be hard. Okay.
Right.
Do it in smaller doses, but, you know, if we needed to buy a bigger element, we could just talk to our project coordinator, you said?
Yeah, project officer. It would be your main point of contact for your project here at EPA.
Okay. I appreciate your help on that. Thank you.
Yep.
We're chatting.
Hey, I'm sorry, Chad. Yep.
That's good. Chatting room again. I was just going to follow up with the PM historical ties. I just moved to the neighborhood about a year ago, and over the last, say, 6 months, I've been initiating negotiations with the city around some of the different issues in our neighborhood. Would I be able to use that experience with the city to list here as far as the historical ties?
Yes.
Or do yes. I need, okay, I was going to say, do I need to just write down, I, you know, exactly what I just said, that I just moved here and list things like that?
So what you just described would qualify in the organization's historical connection to the community, as well as in your PM section, as well as an evaluation of the project manager.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
No.
So I know we're a little over time, and I know everybody has bedtime duty and everything, but I'll stay on for a little bit longer. And again, the recordings of our first calls are available on our website, as well as our EJ Screen webinar. So any questions you have about utilizing EJ Screen and the data from EJ Screen to help you characterize your community is available on our website as well. Someone have a question?
Thank you.
I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, everyone. You all have a great night. Again, reach out to me. My contact information is throughout the request for application. So our next call for the EJ Small Grants is our Spanish call on March 31st. So it'll be entirely in Spanish, and it'll be for our Spanish-speaking applicants. Okay, the applications themselves have to be in English, but we provide that Spanish call just to increase accessibility to our Spanish-speaking audience. So, again, you all have a great evening. Thank you so much for your time and your interest in the EJ Grants program. You all be well.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.